exploited. Oh, making fun of Drake. and I haven't seen any serious Canadian comedian try it yet, but there's a guy living in a giant house in Toronto that looks like a community college that costs $40 million. And he makes kind of okay-ish rap songs about Rihanna. And then so, like, come on. Like, there's a... Sorry, I've been holding on to this for a bit. So, like... Anyways. Whatever. So...
All right. We're going to bring you Bird Note now, and then we'll be back with Stephen, who'll tell us all about the Pacific Opera in their upcoming series.
Maybe Drake was singing in it.
Well, we're just waiting for that. There we go.
This is Bird Note. Photographer Chavi Bow creates incredible images of birds and their movements by combining his love of photography and technology with his love of birds and nature, as seen in his book titled Ornithographies.
And it's created by the Greek root ornithos, that is birds, and graphies, that is draw.
His images draw the paths that birds trace out in the sky with a special technique.
Through making visible several seconds into a single image. Instead of use a still camera, use a cinema camera, and with all footage, stitch all the frames into a single image. So in this way, we could see something that it's not possible to see a naked eye. It's several seconds clearly in the single shot.
He's especially drawn to European starlings and their chaotic and harmonious movements as a flock, called a murmuration. The starlings fly in a tight, synchronized group, sometimes to avoid a predator.
And it's not only a single group of birds flying away, it's interaction between the raptor, the peregrine falcon, and the starlings, and the complexity between one each other. So the result is totally unpredictable because you never know the direction they're going to take the group.
Check out some of Chavi's mesmerizing images of the movements of starlings on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Camilo Garzón.
And Stephen.
Yeah, I'm here to talk about Tosca being put on by the Pacific Opera. And Tosca is one of these mainstays of classical opera, you know, repertoire. And it's by Puccini. It's one of the greats. Everyone loves it. At least I hope everyone loves it. And so you're always worried, you know, is a local sort of theater troupe, the local opera company, doing a good job? But I've been reliably informed that the Pacific Opera is doing a great job. And let me tell you, as a seasoned opera attendee, at $50 a pop, that's a great steal. So the opera is running. If you're in Victoria, or if you want to go to Victoria, which I also recommend, you know, it's Stay at the Empress. It's a good price right now. It's running from Wednesday, February 18th to, let me just check the dates, Tuesday, February 24th. There's performances on the weekend, which is, you know, like 22nd and so on. Yeah. It's in the evening.
Are there matinee shows too? On the weekend?
It doesn't specify. I think there is a matinee show. It's on a Sunday. It's at 2:30. Yeah. It's phenomenal. I don't need to go to Tosca. Everyone knows Tosca, or I hope they do. It's a roller coaster story of love, lust, murder, and political intrigue. Very good things or not so good things.
They make for great stories.
It's actually a co-production with Vancouver Opera, so that's good. You get, you know, a price of two for one. And it will center on the idea of truth. What is truth? Truth is as told to us by political and religious leaders. Truth expressed to us through the eyes of the artists. And I might add, truth is expressed on social media or whatever. In a world where the very idea of truth is negotiated, and perhaps negotiable, how do we know to trust ourselves and stay true to our own truth? Set in Rome in the 1800s, this production stays true to the original setting, creating that grand opera experience with gongs and cannon fire and pipe organs while using projections, enabling us to change our perspective of the piece and allowing moments of complex realism contrasting with the surreal. Yeah, it's directed by Brenna Corner, and with Brett Poligado playing as Scorpio, and Megan Lindsay debuting in the title role. So that should be pretty exciting stuff. Yeah. I'm gonna check it out. I think on the 16th.
Yeah.
Maybe stay or not. It'd be fun. It'd be a good time for everyone.
Sounds good. And as you say, $50 is a real steal for that kind of performance. Putting on an opera is
starts at $50. It might go up to more for yeah. better seats, that kind of thing. Yeah. But I love the cheap seats.
Yeah.
So I don't know about other people, but I love the cheap seats. So
yeah. An opera is a very complicated performance. So if you can get that price, but you should go for it.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, it's good to see the opera scene in BC being, in many cases, alive and well. It used to be that trouble filling theaters. Now it's kind of, it's doing pretty well. It's good to know.
Awesome. Well, we'll have you back again to tell us
about more opera.
Your thoughts on the show, too.
Absolutely. I will do that after I have seen it. And, yeah. After I've enjoyed the performances.
Excellent. All right. You're listening to Speak Up here on CGSF 90.1 FM. We're coming to you from the top of Burnaby Mountain here at Simon Fraser University. We love that you're out there listening, and we'd love to hear from you and your thoughts about anything you hear on this program or any of the others. You can send us a text at our studio line here. Number is 778-782-2573. Send us a text anytime, and we would love to hear from you. We're always interested in hearing what everyone has to say. Follow us on social media. We are on Instagram at CGSF Talk and CGSF Music, also on Blue Sky and TikTok as well. So check us out on those platforms. Just search for CGSF or CGSF Radio. You'll find us pretty easily. We'd love to hear from you there as well. Coming up later today on CGSF, of course, up at 11 is Democracy Now! And after that, Wandering Rhythms, music from around the world with Nick Legacy. At 3 o'clock, typically Tuesday, with Leslie Wang. And then so much more programming coming up throughout the evening. So please stay tuned for all that. Now we're turning to a report from Lauren McKenzie at CHLY in Nanaimo. And she's going to talk to us about wind phones. What's a wind phone? It's a tool for helping people deal with their grief.
This is a CHLY News Update. Grief can be a hard topic to talk about, and a new wind phone gives space for people to honor loved ones and help process grief. A wind phone is a non-working phone for people to use as a bridge between those who have passed and those who are still living as a way to process grief. The concept of a wind phone was developed in Japan when in 2011, Itaru Sasaki built a phone booth in his yard so he could connect with a deceased relative. Following a devastating earthquake and tsunami in the country, he opened his backyard wind phone for his neighbors and community to use to process the loss many have faced. In Nanaimo, a permanent wind phone has been installed at the Bowen Road Cemetery by the city of Nanaimo to offer those grieving a space of reflection and healing.
Well, I'm very aware that as a society that we're generally afraid to talk about death, and that those who are going through a grieving process don't feel comfortable to openly talk about it, and it's often something you do in private. And I really think that there's something to be said about supporting one another through the grief process and normalizing death and grief.
That was Carmen Lavoie, a social worker professor at Vancouver Island University. She was the one who initiated the project with the city. CHY met with her at the cemetery where the wind phone is located. As a professor, she has researched death, grieving, and how to talk about the difficult subjects. She says death and grief tend to be topics no one really wants to talk about.
So when I do bring the topic in, it can sometimes be a surprise for students, but also an aha moment. It's like, oh, right, that's actually something that's important to all of us, and that we do need to be having these conversations and talking about it and supporting people through that process.
She says when she first heard of wind phones, she thought the idea of the phones seemed like an easy way to support the community. She then went to the city Nanaimo with the idea.
Because we do want to be there for each other, for those we care about at end of life, but oftentimes we don't even know how to do that. It can be kind of tucked away somewhere or in a hospital or out of sight, which is very different than how it used to be historically for a lot of folks.
The phone sculpture titled Waves was created by Nanaimo artist and designer Maru Della Costa. Della Costa told CHOI he got the inspiration for the design from the ripples drops of water leave.
A simple drop can affect a whole surface of water just with a tiny thing. And was kind of like that, how you put a message in your phone of your words and like expand it through the infinite.
He says he had his own personal connection to the design and installation.
In my last time with my father, that he was in Argentina, all my communication with him was by phone. So it was very represented for this project.
The installation also has a personal connection with Lavoie, whose late father's old phone is used in it.
My dad worked for Alberta Government Telephones, AGT, for his whole career, his whole life. That's where he worked. And over those many years, he collected many phones and would refurbish them and take care of them. And he'd save them for his children and pass them on. And he died about 2.5 years ago. And for me, knowing that there was this collection of phones, it really seemed like, what else could we do with them other than maybe have a wind phone? So the phone that's in there is one of the phones that he collected. It's an old wall phone, rotary, with a cord, and it's something he actually carved his initials in the bottom of, because that's how he handled his stuff all the time. Anyway.
Lavoie says there's no right or wrong way for someone to use the wind phone.
My only suggestion would be just to begin with visualizing that they are on the other line, that they are on the other end of that call, and just allow yourself to say what you need to say.
She says the experience can be very different for each person.
So children would maybe use it to talk about their friends and their homework to someone who's passed, and others might use it to say things that they never got a chance to say.
She says her hope for the wind phone is for grieving people to feel comfortable using it and to normalize feelings of grief and loss. The wind phone is located near the Howard Avenue entrance of the Bowen Road Cemetery. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
And from their recent album, Friendship and Rock and Roll, this is Yukon Blonde and Color of My Dreams.
About the pain she put me through. We shine. Oh.
Yukon Blonde and Color of My Dreams from their album Friendship and Rock and Roll. You can get it at all the usual places and streaming platforms. And now we have a report. Stay tuned. Democracy Now! Is coming up in about 13 and a half minutes. I'm sure they'll have lots to say about all the crazy stuff happening down in the States and keep you up to date on that. Tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Is another edition of Speak Up, hosted by Danny Nesvadaran, and he'll bring a lot of great reports about our local scene and around the world. So tune in for that. Speak Up comes to you every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday morning. You can tune in on Friday mornings for Intravenous, hosted by our own Nicole Hines and a great crew of contributors. So tune in for that on Wednesday at 10 o'clock as well.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Alaska's Salmon River was once known for its clean, sparkling water. But recently, the river has turned a sickly shade of orange, and scientists say climate change is to blame. As temperatures rise, nearby permafrost, or long frozen ground, is thawing. That's letting water and oxygen seep underground and mix with sulfide minerals, creating sulfuric acid. That acid eats away at rocks and releases metals like aluminum, cadmium, and iron. This contaminates the river and makes it cloudy and discolored.
It's pretty upsetting to see that these areas that we have cherished and tried to protect are being severely degraded by anthropogenic climate change.
At many points along the Salmon River, Patrick Sullivan of the University of Alaska Anchorage and his colleagues found enough of these metals to be toxic to aquatic life. Aluminum and iron can clog fish gills, while cadmium can cause calcium deficiencies. Sullivan says dozens of other streams in Alaska and Canada show the same signs of contamination. So climate change and melting permafrost are polluting the once pristine rivers of the far north.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Colin James has been a fixture on the local BC, Vancouver, and Canadian music scene for, well, a long, long time now. He's playing this weekend here in Vancouver. Two shows on Saturday night. On Friday night and Saturday night. You can find those tickets online. This is a track. This is Colin James with Lucinda Williams, and the song is called Protection. Well, I'm sorry, that's not going to work for us. Okay, well, we have, just give me a minute here. We have a bit of a, bring you this message here, and we'll be back, hopefully, with Colin James, and if not, we have a another report for you.
Welcome to Dr. Mysterio's Happy Hour, the second radio show with Spanish subtitles. We broadcast in Technicolor every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM. Tune in, fill your Sunday soundtrack glass with happy rhythms, predominantly in Spanish, but with tons of female and Canadian content, and join us for table talk with local and international artists. Dr. Mysterio's Happy Hour, every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM.
K-News. The Honoring Our Elders Legacy Project, a recipient of the BC Reconciliation Award, recognizes elders from both the local Wet'suwet'en and settler communities through student-created portraiture, using art as a tool for relationship building and reconciliation. Smithers Secondary art teacher Perry Rath played a key role as a founding collaborator, helping design and sustain the project's artistic and educational vision, and he is receiving the BC Reconciliation Award this week on behalf of this incredible 20-year-long project on display on the front-facing walls of Smithers Secondary School.
I'm Perry Rath, the art teacher at Smithers Secondary School.
Can you tell me a little bit about the award and also the project that led up to it and then partners that you worked with to achieve this award?
Yeah. The BC Reconciliation Award, I think this is its, I think they said it was its fifth or sixth year doing it. Like it's maybe started in 2019, an annual recognition of efforts around the province of along the lines of reconciliation. So some of the award winners I looked at were like more like service kinds of based things, like cultural camps or housing supports or that kind of thing. And ours is a art-based one up here in Smithers. And we started it like in 2005, so basically 20, 21 years ago. And it was before like the buzzwords of reconciliation and stuff were bantered around, before the TRC and those sorts of recommendations. So it was just a way for us to, I came together with the Indigenous Education Council. Bertie Markert is the Indigenous district principal here. Millie Gunanute was an Indigenous support worker here. Melanie Marin was also involved at the time when she was working here. And we were trying to come up with a legacy project that could continue in the school. And yeah, so obviously the power of art is a great way to manifest those kinds of attributes. And so Millie was the one who had the phrase, I wish we could walk down the hallway and we'd have the elders looking down upon us kind of thing. And so that's the germination of the idea. But I knew that the ceiling tiles are not very permanent, really. So it was like, let's elevate that a little bit more. So then we moved into these large 4-foot square panels. And so it's something we do every 2 years, sometimes every 3 years, depending, where we choose a Wet'suwet'en elder and then a non-Wet'suwet'en elder from the community, someone who's made a lot of contributions to our community here. And then I get students to paint them, and they get to hear some stories about the elders as well as they paint it and meet the family. But they don't actually meet the elders until the unveiling. And the unveiling is, we have a Della Herman Theater. There's like full of classes to witness this event. And the family members speak about the stories of each of the elders. And the elders are there. The goal is also to honor living elders so that they can actually feel the gratitude from our community for what they've done and see this portrait of themselves. And if they're Wet'suwet'en, we rotate through the clans, and they often come wearing their regalia, and it's just, and then we have a little luncheon afterwards for the two families to meet and mingle with the artists and with each other. It's been one of my most profound projects to be involved in my career as an art teacher. And then we put them up on the outside of the school, like an elder's wall, to welcome just as an elder presence for our school when people come into the school.
How are the painters chosen?
Occasionally there'll be a student who'll be like, I would really love to be a painter for the elders project. But oftentimes, though, it's often a grade 11 or 12 student. Mm. I've gotten to know them over the years, see them develop. Yeah. And I'm like, I think this person could do this well and has what it takes to do it. But even then, I'm coaching them through the process because it's a whole new thing for them. And many of them are very, they enter it with like hesitation. And even through the process, even if they're doing great, I just know the painting process, the creative process in general, you have these ups and downs of self-doubts and elevations of, oh, it's going great. And then, oh, no, it's not working the way I want it to. So there's a lot of support for students through that process because that's an important part of the growth.
Okay. So at this time, to be recognized provincially for such an ambitious 21-year project that you've been doing at the high school, do you think that it brings back an idea of the importance of art and how it actually does bridge cultural generational divides?
Yeah, even my classroom budget is down this year, but every time we become visible as an art, as with an art project, whether it's the visual arts, music, drama, it just emphasizes the importance of it. And it can only hope, okay, enough of the people that make these decisions of finances see this huge value in the arts, not only for a showcase project like this, but just the process of becoming a human being through the creative process is a huge addition to a young person's life, but also adult, anyone of any age. But when we get a recognition like this at a provincial level for this project, yeah, it's a huge honor and hopefully a wake up, an eye-opening thing for everyone involved, for everyone who sees it, to be like, yeah, the power of art is undeniable and we need it in our society and we can't keep cutting corners to limit it.
Tell me, what does the actual ceremony look like?
Yeah, we had a meeting with the Lieutenant Governor's office to go over it and to meet the other award winners, because there's, I think, 5 different award winners, some individuals and some other organizations or agencies across BC. So yeah, we will be at the Lieutenant Governor's house, the government house. Just this, it's interesting because it's obviously a big colonial house and this is like a reconciliation event. So they're trying to merge the government kind of side of things with the indigenous kind of side of things. People will be dressed in all kinds of regalia. The local First Nations will be drumming us in, and there'll be presentations with indigenous art actually involved, I think. And yeah, I guess I don't know all the details, but it'll be basically we sit on one side of the room and we'll be called up, and there'll be some sort of ceremonial recognition at the time.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's great to be noticed up in a small rural setting by the people in the big cities or whatever. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.
And that report was about Smithers High School teacher Perry Roth, who accepted a Lieutenant Governor's BC Reconciliation Award for a 20-year project in his community, bringing reconciliation and coming together to Smithers High Schools. As I was saying a little while ago, Colin James is playing 2 shows this weekend, Friday and Saturday night, at the Commodore Ballroom. And we're going to give you a little taste of what you might hear that evening. This is Colin James and Why Do You Lie? Tuning in today, you've been listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Magnus Teevil. Joining me today in the studio was Stephen Fan. Democracy Now! Will be coming up in just a couple moments. Please tune in for tomorrow's episode of Speak Up, starting at 10 a.m.